This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Friday afternoon, July 26th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The Olympics are seen as a chance for NBC's Peacock streaming service to score some more subscribers. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the occasional three-paycheck month can present some important financial opportunities. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder, Rappaport Rikus Capital Management, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life in Chicago. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And we get, most of us get 26 paychecks per year. If you are a full-time salaried employee, paid every 2 weeks, more often than not on Friday. And that means if you're doing your financial projections, you usually do it based on two paychecks hitting per month. But every now and then you get that occasional month in which you get paid three times, and that presents an opportunity, Sherry.
Oh, definitely. And I, you know, that third paycheck everyone gets really, really excited about. And I get excited telling people what to do with that third paycheck. So I have a few tips here. You know, don't just squander it away. There's a few things you can do. First of all, if you have credit card debt, which, you know, I've been on your show a lot, I am not a fan of that. It could be up to 20%. It's very hard to reduce that. So if you do have credit card debt or any other high interest debt, I would take a portion of that and, first of all, pay that down. That would be a very prudent thing to do. If you're debt free, which I hope your listeners are, and if they've lived within their means, which is one of my key principles in life, then make sure you replenish that emergency fund. You know, most I recommend, you know, 3 to 6 months of expenses. Put it in a high-yield savings account. You could probably get 4 or 5% now. And again, if you are saving that money, make sure you're getting a good interest rate. But fill that emergency fund. If you have an emergency fund and you're debt-free, which I hope you all are, then it's time to invest long-term. If you have kids, maybe put a little bit in a 529 plan. That's a college savings plan that has a lot of advantages, grows tax-free if you use it for college. Based on your income and talk to your tax advisor, a Roth IRA would be good, or just invest the money. And the last tip I have, which is something I talk a lot about in my book, is your values. Invest in yourself. You know, you got that extra paycheck. Take a little bit of that, whether it's a massage, maybe it's a special book you want to buy, or maybe take a friend out for dinner, but do something fun and invest in yourself. So don't squander that third paycheck. It doesn't happen often. Make sure you have good use for it.
We're talking about how you can spend your third paychecks a month of your year with Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder, Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago. Very quickly, Sherry, let's say you have accomplished all of those three goals. You have all of your ducks in a row. And in your experience, do you see a lot of your clients also using that third paycheck maybe as a seed money for the Christmas gift fund or the vacation fund?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of, you know, investing in yourself. So, you know, when you do your budget at the beginning of the year and your values, think what's important. Maybe a vacation or a big birthday is coming up. You can use some of that money as a seed money for that. But that should be in your overall budget at the beginning of the year. That's something you just don't want to spring on yourself to make you use credit card debt or not be financially responsible.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder, Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, will viewers flock to Peacock to watch the Olympics?
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
NBC's Peacock streaming service is front and center with the Summer Olympics underway in Paris. Let's discuss the potential impact on subscriptions with Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group in Chicago. Tim, thank you for joining us today. And this really really is a coming out party of sorts for Peacock, because even though some Olympic events were available for streaming in the delayed 2020 games held in Tokyo in 2021 and the Winter Games in Beijing in 2022, this is the first Olympic Games, I believe, Tim, where Peacock has the rights to everything.
Well, look, the I think the promise of Peacock this year, this season, this Olympics journey is probably it's literally primetime positioning. It is going to be everything live and available. Right? I think this is something that when everybody recognized that NBC was going to move a lot of things to streaming, that was the hope, right? Frankly, that all of the every single event, whether it's preliminary rounds of equestrian or badminton finals or whatever, is literally going to be available at one's fingertips. And this is much more in line with what everybody expects, frankly, from sports coverage these days. And that's access live and as comprehensively offered as possible. And this is, I think, frankly, this is the big opportunity for Peacock to prove its mettle, so to speak.
Now, when it comes to Peacock subscriptions, Comcast reported not too long ago that there was some drop-off in Peacock subscriptions, and I was wondering if that drop-off was related to people who signed up for it in January so they could watch the one Peacock-exclusive NFL playoff game that just happened to feature the Kansas City Chiefs, that just happened to feature Taylor Swift under frozen glass in Buffalo, and that they signed up for it to watch that game, then let those subscriptions lapse.
Yeah, no, I think it is definitely that's part of the mix, that sort of trial and recognizing that they need to unsubscribe after that quality game, right? But I think, frankly, it also is reflective of what the parent company Comcast has been doing over the last number of months, which is kind of like what Netflix has been doing and trying to sort of kick away freeloaders and people multiply using passwords and the like, and even cable subscribers. Comcast cable subscribers who until recently were essentially getting subsidized their Peacock service. So they're kind of doing stuff behind the scenes, so to speak, to clean up, if you will, the quality of the subscriber base. So sure, some of it was NBC football desertion, but I think frankly, it's also reflective of what they're trying to do to make more quality subscribers and paying at that. Look, at this point, the Olympics obviously is going to be a very huge draw, and with things like Gold Zone, literally like the NFL whip-around show, Red Zone, the ability to put three or four games in one single screen frame, a whole host of rewind and watch live things, and every single live feed from the international feeds offered by the Olympic Committee, it should be an embarrassment of riches for anybody who's eager to watch as much of the Olympics as they want on their own time.
We're talking about the Olympics and streaming with Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group in Chicago. Tim, and one thing, I've always loved the Olympics, even going back to when I was a kid, and I guess it was a sure sign of anything that I was destined for a career in broadcasting was that watching the games way back when, I was more interested in the mechanics of how ABC, which was the Olympics network back then, went back and forth between all the events in prime time. I was more interested in the mechanics of broadcasting than the games themselves. But the big push and pull for Olympics broadcasting from time immemorial is you had one network and you had X amount of time, and you had to kind of pick and choose what the events were. You had to edit things. You had to jump back and forth. Now, there were lots of attempts over the years to give you that God mode, to see everything that was happening, like the triple cast back in the 90s, the pay-per-view offering. But now that dream has been realized here, Theus, thanks to streaming.
Yeah, look, and I think this is really kind of where we are in terms of sports broadcasting, and in this case, the Olympics. The ability to get that editorially curated, rich narrative storyline setup, and the emotional tearjerker stories behind the obstacles overcome, and all that kind of stuff, that will absolutely be part of the NBC television broadcast. That will be part of the linear television cable networks that cover the events for sure. But if you want it unfiltered, if you want all the access to the matches, you want to see stuff as it unfolds, as a real-time sporting event, not with, you know, all that dressing and all that narrative. That's where Peacock comes in really handy, because you're going to have all kinds of ways to access that stuff directly and on your own time and in your own manner of enjoyment. And I think that's a benefit for sports fans. Some who want the curation, some who want the direct. You have both opportunities available to you now this year, and it's going to be exciting to see how it plays out.
Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, an update on a major computing campus plan for Chicago's southeast side.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A new quantum computing campus plan for the empty former U.S. Steel facility on the southeast side has government support, but still needs the backing of the community. Let's get the latest now from Pete Shadbolt, co-founder of Psi Quantum in San Francisco. Pete, thank you for joining us today. Now, when you settled on the southeast side of Chicago, the former U.S. Steel site on the lakefront south of downtown, how many sites nationwide were under consideration, and what made Chicago so attractive to you?
Yeah, so thanks so much for having us on the call here, Rob. We've been working hard in San Francisco for the last 8 years to bring our technology to the point where we're ready to build a very big system that we hope will unlock the exciting promises of quantum computing. Of course, we looked at many different sites which had the basic technical requirements of land and power and water that we need for this computer. But in Chicago, what really attracted us here was, first of all, the history of these kind of very grand and successful engineering projects, things like the first sustained nuclear reaction, the reversing of the flow of the river, the raising of entire city blocks, and of course the incredibly good quantum ecosystem, the universities, the Argonne and Fermilab national labs, and most of all, really the extremely collaborative and sophisticated attitude that we found around quantum computing and advanced technology here in Chicago.
Now, when we talk about artificial intelligence, especially talking to people who are on the leading edge of AI, they talk about that AI is going to be revolutionary, but they all say to a person that the real revolutionary technology, the amazing stuff, is all going to happen with quantum computing. And how is quantum computing going to change basically everything as far as what AI can do and just making us more productive?
Yeah, so quantum computing is an idea that has been around for many decades and has attracted a lot of attention and excitement because it has the potential to solve problems that we could never solve using conventional supercomputers or even using AI. And these are generally the very hardest problems in things like chemistry and physics and math. It's an area that has also attracted a lot of hype. It can be difficult to separate the hype from the reality sometimes. But we're very serious about realizing this technology. And we are also very happy that we'll be joined on this campus by the universities, the national labs. And it was also recently announced that DARPA will bring their quantum benchmarking program to this site. So it's good to be ushering this technology into reality, surrounded by a lot of other partners to try to keep it steady as it comes out into the real world.
It's a symbol of 20th century industrial might, now the home to 21st century intellectual heft. Pete Shadbolt, co-founder of Psi Quantum in San Francisco, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, baking up sweet treats and custom cakes on Chicago's South Side.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Arrests have been made in an arson case last year that left Chicago firefighter dead. Police question a person of interest in the shooting death of a North Suburban teenager. It's Entrepreneur Friday. We'll meet the creative owner of a successful bakery on Chicago's South Side. And some homeowners could face unexpected foreclosures because of zombie mortgages. WBBM WBBM Business. The markets are higher. The Dow now up 809 points. The NASDAQ up 269. The S&P 500 up 88. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, pleasant with plenty of hazy sunshine. High of 83, upper 70s along the lakefront. 78 degrees right now under mostly sunny skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. Three people are charged with murder, arson, and financial crimes in the death of a Chicago firefighter and paramedic in April of last year. 49-year-old Jermaine Pelt died while battling a fire at a home at 120th and Wallace on the south side. The suspects identified as 22-year-old Martez Chrysler of Hammond, 37-year-old Nicholas Virgil of Riverdale, and 47-year-old Anthony Moore of Blue Island. A person of interest is being questioned in the Wednesday night shooting of 15-year-old Valeria Rodriguez inside her home in Round Lake Beach. The Suburbs Police Department and the Lake County Major Crimes Task Force say they gathered enough information to obtain a search warrant at the home of the person they're speaking to. A weapon was located and seized during the search. No word yet on any charges. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues and markets are way up. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And you're a well-known, well-documented optimist when it comes to both the markets and the economy. And based on the PCE report that came out today and the way the markets reacted to it, as they say on Twitter, we are so back.
Yeah, it didn't take long, did it? Thanks for having me back, and happy Friday, everybody. You know, we had nearly a 5% mild pullback in the S&P 500 after one of the best starts to a year ever and the second best start to an election year since 1976. Earlier this week, we had the first 2% drop, I believe Wednesday, first 2% drop for the S&P in almost a year and a half, Rob. So a long, long time. But now here we are. And that was because of some concerns out of some tech earnings. But let's put it this way. Just today, right, 3M is up close to, like, at least earlier, like 16, 17%. Best day in history. Okay, there are a lot of companies that are coming out saying, listen, we're still making money. Economy's still good. Maybe we had a little bumpy start to earnings season, but Rob, it's looking good. And what impresses me so much is different companies are creating a lot of earnings. It's not just the seven big tech names that honestly did for so long. It's broadening out, and that is a good sign.
And on top of that, another encouraging read on inflation, and we could get some more guidance next week about what the Fed is going to do when it comes to interest rate cuts. They're probably not going to cut in July, but they'll give you the roadmap.
You're right. You did actually ask me about inflation in the first question there. I just went on a little tangent. But yes, this morning, the PCE, that's what we call the Fed's favorite measure of inflation. Let's keep this simple for the listeners. It continues to show inflation is improving, right? CPI is the core, or the consumer price index, what most people pay attention to. That's been improving. So let's just keep this simple here. Inflation's really improving. What does that mean? It means we don't need interest rates as high. Interest rates are up over 5%. The Fed, we've been saying for a while the Fed should start to cut, but listen, they have to, you know, make it obvious what they're doing. So next week at the meeting, they're going to set the table for a rate cut. Just so everyone knows, it's like a 97% chance of a rate cut this September, according to Fed funds futures. This is being priced in. We don't expect the Fed to do anything different, likely set the table. And we're of the opinion we might see three cuts this year, September, November, and December. And again, the economy's good. It's just we don't need interest rates as high because inflation's come drastically back, which is a great thing.
Now, just to if there's a little bit of anxiety sitting in the back of our collective minds, and that is when we get to September and they do cut rates by a quarter point, what is that going to do for economic activity? I mean, are we going to see a pickup after that point? And how can we be sure that inflation is not going to reignite or at least warm up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you truly don't know if it's going to warm up. That's what worries the Fed if they cut and inflation comes back. But we think when you look at different components, there's like 178 components of core PCE, you know, just came out this morning, like 35% of them are negative year over year, okay? So you never know if it's going to come back. But a couple surgical cuts, in our opinion, should not reignite massive, massive inflation. Now, you mentioned September. Just for the listeners to know, September, October of an election year, usually not very good for stocks. Just think the last couple of elections, 16 and 20, right? We had some sell-offs. We had some volatility. We had some worry ahead of time. We don't think this year is going to be any different. Maybe the first Fed cut, in a long time, and then the election, all the uncertainty. Just we've had a great year, clearly, for investors, on top of 25% on the S&P last year. Let's just remember, we're probably going to have some bumps and bruises getting to the election, but then as history has shown us, once the uncertainty of that election's out of the way, you tend to resume the trend, which in our opinion is a bull market. So we've got a strong economy, some cuts coming up, buckle up for the election, but it's still a bull market, Rob.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, finding a sweet spot, building a business featuring baked goods and more.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Entrepreneur Friday, and this afternoon we put the spotlight on the owner of a business that's guaranteed to bring a smile to your face and satisfaction to your stomach. We welcome in Stephanie Hart, owner and founder of the Brown Sugar Bakery in Chicago. Stephanie, thanks for joining us today, and I should say happy birthday to you. Hopefully you know someone who can get you a good birthday cake.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be with you talking about business on my birthday. That's fun.
And on top of that, it is Mick Jagger's birthday, and it seems almost preordained that you would have a place called the Brown Sugar Bakery.
It's definitely preordained. I am not only born the same day as Mick Jagger, but the same year the Rolling Stones became officially a band. How about that?
Now, this was, you grew up in the western suburbs, and the song Brown Sugar was originally directed towards you in a derogatory fashion by people around you, and this was kind of a way of taking ownership and gaining power over it.
Yeah, it was. So people would, it was tough in those days. I was stuck out, 4,000 kids, about 10 minorities. But I would tell them, you're singing songs about me, right? And they were like, we're not singing songs about you. I'm like, every time you say brown sugar, you're singing about me. So, yeah, that I wish I could have told Mick himself. But, maybe one day.
Well, one day when the Rolling Stones come back into town, because, Stephanie, you and I spoke 3 years ago in April of 2021, because you've had some VIPs come through your shop on 75th Street in Chatham on the south side. Vice President Kamala Harris stopped by the shop in April of 2021. And I remember we talked back then. It was really fast. I think you were in traffic. You missed her the first time she swung by the shop.
I missed her, but my team did not. They were able to greet her, and everyone is so excited at the prospect that maybe not only the vice president came by, but now it's possible that it will be the president-elect.
Now, I was going to say, she's the presumptive Democratic nominee, and there will be a coronation at the United Center for Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee next month at the DNC. Have you been in touch with her campaign about possibly having a reunion sometime between now and the Democratic National Convention? Or does that level of advanced planning even exist in presidential politics today?
I don't think it does, but luckily for me, because the Democratic Convention is happening here and that we will be represented, there are a few events that we'll be at, including a couple of big events at Navy Pier that she may show up to, because these are pretty big events. So we're hoping that something of ours will get to her.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. We're talking with Stephanie Hart, owner and founder of the Brown Sugar Bakery on East 75th Street on the south side of Chicago. Now, you started this bakery in 2002. You were in the tech industry for 20 years. And the fact that we're talking about vice presidents and presumptive Democratic nominees showing up at your business because you are a successful small businesswoman, I mean, that has got to be incredible validation for all of your efforts.
You know what is more incredible validation, and it is my birthday, so I'm not just saying this, is that people celebrate with my cakes, Rob. That makes me feel better than anything. When I see a picture come through my timeline and some kid or older mature person like myself is blowing out candles on a brown sugar cake, When I tell you that makes me feel way up, it makes me feel way up. I think that is the most important thing that I get to do, is help my city celebrate good times. And it's especially important for me to help people celebrate their personal holiday, their birthdays.
Speaking of which, we're talking with the birthday girl, Stephanie Hart, Yay! Owner and founder of the Brown Sugar Bakery. And I do believe this is a gentleman never says, but I do believe this is the news radio interview birthday. So thank you for celebrating it with us, Stephanie.
Thank you, Rob.
Owner and founder of the Brown Sugar Bakery in Chicago.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A so-called zombie mortgage could come between you and your home. Let's learn more about what the term means and what you can do about it from Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, thank you for joining us today. The term zombie mortgage, it's a fun name, but the reality is terrifying if you find yourself the holder of one of them.
Amen. And it is a fun name, but it is not a fun outcome. Absolutely not. These things are obviously being talked about a little bit more. And I think we live in a society and a world today that these folks are out there trying to capitalize on some of these old debts.
What is a zombie mortgage, and how can you find yourself as the victim of one of them?
So, simply put, Rob, I think it's if you've ever taken out a loan, whether it be a second loan or maybe it's even credit card debt, these zombie mortgages are, you think you paid it off, and when you've closed on your transaction, you don't receive any more statements. There's no more issue to say, hey, you owe X still, and then all of a sudden, coming out of the woodwork is this second mortgage that said, oh, by the way, that $65,000 mortgage that you had, it's still alive. And with the interest now, you owe, $200,000. And it's ultimately just old debt that just kind of resurfaces.
Now, what are some ways you can do to be proactive and stay ahead of it?
Well, I mean, that's what we do as a title company. That's one of the things that we try to protect our clients from, is ultimately, when you do a closing, you're going to be told all of the liens and encumbrances that are listed against your home. This is obviously going to be a lien that's listed, but if it's not listed and it doesn't show up on title, meaning that it's not a lien against the property, you certainly could be dealing with talking to a lawyer and, talking to banks, trying to figure out how these things are going to be negotiated. Now, if it's some of these bad debts that you still do owe money on, you still may owe money on it. They still may, be able to enforce you to pay these things.
And then outside of just going down the legal route, I mean, is what can you do also if you find yourself the victim of a zombie mortgage and you just don't have the ability to pay? I mean, is there a way you can settle it? Is there a way that it can be written off? I mean, what are your options in that situation?
That's a really great question. And I think, that's the assumption that is being taken right now, is these things have already been written off once and they're sold in a secondary market and then they're resurfaced. So, yes, you can probably have these renegotiated. You can talk to some of the different, debt consolidators. But, if you think that if you believe that it's not real, certainly, go after this thing and make sure you're proactive to, getting some legal counsel in. Certainly a title company can potentially even help you, but, engage all of the professionals to help you look at it. But if you do believe you owe it, and it is a viable, lien, that's something that, you may be able to have to negotiate and talk to a debt collector about.
Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.